Money condenses energy. Bitcoin is the first and only tool we have for converting electric energy to monetary energy. Now, what does this do to the energy market? The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. We still do not have Lynn Alden's piece on QE and inflation and deflation. I am sorry. It is basically a novel, but it is on its way. However, with all of the energy kicking and screaming and squealing going on in the mainstream lately, kind of felt like a good time to interrupt our regularly scheduled programming with another piece on the Bitcoin and energy debate. This one is from the amazing Citadel 21 publication. Citadel 21 is an amazing list of articles. Their magazine is legit. If you haven't checked it out, just go to Citadel21.com. And this article is by Knut Svanholm, many-time author on this podcast. I've done the audio for both of his incredible books, Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. Just lots of great content. You can just search him on the website in the library and find tons of other stuff that he's done. But real quick, a thanks before we jump into this one to swanbitcoin.com, the automated set it and forget it Bitcoin savings plan. And with all the volatility, it should be pretty self-evident that just buying regularly and saving is a brilliant stress-free strategy. Swan Bitcoin basically makes that as easy as possible. And in other BlockFi-related news, holding your own keys with the BitBox 2 hardware wallet, an open-source security device for your Bitcoin, also seems like a pretty self-evident and stress-free strategy. In just a few days, seems to prove that we have really good sponsors for this show, exactly what makes all of this craziness seem like no big deal. So 5% off the BitBox with coupon code GUY, G-U-Y, and $10 free in sats for your Swan Bitcoin plan if you go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. With that, let's hit today's article on Bitcoin and the energy problem, and it's titled Orange is the New Green by Knut Svanholm. Why Bitcoin is good for the environment. Switzerland consumes about as much electricity as the Bitcoin network. It is an environmental disaster. We should ban the use of Switzerland immediately. Here's why this proposal actually makes more sense than banning Bitcoin. Quote, if there is an escape, that escape will be used. Christine Lagarde. If there is an escape, that escape will be used, Christine Lagarde said. The president of the European Central Bank wants a regulatory framework for Bitcoin. She ought to have figured out that she can't do much about it at this point. This is one of the most common misconceptions about Bitcoin, that someone somewhere can do something about it. No one can do anything about Bitcoin. Not Christine Lagarde, not Switzerland, and not the UN. There's no one in charge of Bitcoin, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. These people ought to be a little more humble in their approach. A local ban on Bitcoin will make the users in that jurisdiction move to a more friendly one. The more friendly the place, the more that place will thrive from having a lot of Bitcoiners there. A restriction on electricity use might force the local miner to close his business, but at the same time, it will make the process more profitable for other miners elsewhere. Satoshi designed Bitcoin to thrive in adversarial conditions. Attacks against it will only fortify its immune system, an immune system made up of individual nodes all around the world. This system ensures that there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoins available. Absolute digital scarcity. Unforgeable production costliness of a monetary good. humanity has never had that before. Nation states and central banking have been around for eons. What is a central bank and what does it do? A central bank is a centralized institution that issues a nation state's money, usually in exchange for government bonds, bonds that are a promise from the government to pay back the loan at an unknown point in the future. However, that money is owed back with interest, so for every $1 curated, more than $1 is demanded to be returned. But because of the interest on the loan, there's never enough fiat money in circulation to pay it back. Fundamentally, the system must always owe more money as debt than there is money that exists. There is never enough fiat money in circulation to pay it back. This is always the case when banks conjure fiat money into existence. Fiat money is debt. The prevailing economic theory behind the mechanics of money states that this is a good thing. It keeps people incentivized to spend their money. Fiat economists believe spending to be a good thing, since every trade produces a new good or service, and there's no limit to how many times you can spend a 100 euro bill, right? Well, spending can be good for an economy, but it doesn't have to be. An investment in something that can produce value in the future is a good thing. Wasteful consumption for consumption's sake is not. It's the illusion of economic progress rather than actual economic progress. The damage central banking has done to the world is immeasurable, and every country in the whole world still believes its untruthful promises. The scourge of consumerism. What we live in today is a world based on consumerism. Wasteful spending at the expense of future generations. No wonder we have environmental problems. Production and transportation costs are lower than ever. The vectors all point in the same direction. Zero marginal costs. But fiat money already has a zero marginal cost, and today's high prices are artificial. The only thing that can give you a hint at how cheap everything is Bitcoin. Its ever-increasing purchasing power is a testament to how fooled we've been. The production of more junk is of almost no cost to the producers of that junk. It's costly to the consumer, but not as costly as not spending your money at all. In a Bitcoin-denominated world, we can all access the riches of the abundant future. All we have to do is alter our time horizon. With Bitcoin, we can all get everything we want by saving money. It's that simple. But the real beauty of the system is that we will stop overconsuming. Bitcoin's dilution-proof technology ensures that everyone stays disincentivized to spend. No one wants to let go of a monetary good that goes up in value over time. Everyone will be more careful with their money. This is what the world needs, as well as what everyone in it needs on a personal level. Bitcoin is a value battery. It's not the only way in which Bitcoin is good for the environment, though. Most of the criticisms about its energy use focuses on the costliness of mining. But the critics are all missing the point. The energy cost for mining is what makes the system work. The miners are competing for a specific reward in the form of new bitcoins every 10 minutes. The more miners that connect to the network, the harder the competition becomes. It gets more costly in energy terms. But what is money if not energy? Money provides humans with a tool for converting energy between different states. Your labor is a form of energy, as are the things you buy with the fruits from it. Furthermore, the cost of mining Bitcoin is in direct proportion to its value. The more valuable Bitcoin becomes, the more miners will come online. The more miners that come online, the costlier the mining process. The costlier the mining process, the higher the price of the recently found coins. It's a positive feedback loop. Money condenses energy. Bitcoin is the first and only tool we have for converting electric energy to monetary energy. Now, what does this have to do with the energy market? First of all, miners will always search for the cheapest energy sources available. They all operate under an ever-increasing incentive to cut their electricity costs. Renewable energy is the cheapest form of energy there is when it actually works. Right now, much of it doesn't. It exists through artificial life support through government subsidies. Bitcoin miners look for the real thing. To them, there's no transportation cost to the electricity. Electricity is only transportable within a limited range from a power plant. But you can deploy a Bitcoin mining rig anywhere. They don't even have to be close to a human settlement. The ideal location would be a hydroelectric plant by a waterfall in a cold country to cool the miners. The energy generated there wouldn't need traditional means of transportation. It wouldn't need a power grid at all. The owner of the plant could instead store the energy in a value battery. Bitcoin is that battery. Everything mankind ever invented saves someone time somewhere. That's why we invent stuff in the first place. You can exchange money for every other thing that was ever invented. This makes money the ultimate time saver, but only if it can keep its value over time. Bitcoin is the first and only type of money that can't have its value diluted by creating more of it. The environment prefers Bitcoin. Now back to Switzerland, or any other nation for that matter. What does a nation do? It leeches wealth from its population through taxes and inflation. It does this to pay for various consumer goods and services for its citizens. At least that's what we're told by its propaganda machines. In reality, the fiat monetary system always ends up rewarding those who know how to play the system, not those that actually produce value for their fellow human beings. That is why taxes always go up, why inflation gets worse, and why most people work more for less over time. It ought to be the other way around. Yet bureaucracy keeps on expanding to meet the needs of the expanding bureaucracy. Millions of people have jobs that contribute nothing to the advancement of mankind. Zero. Work for work's sake. Large institutions are inefficient, cruel, and unfair, despite their often noble intentions. Democratic decisions are not moral. What the majority of a population thinks is for the most part unintelligent at best and pure evil at worst. So, in conclusion, no one should strive to ban Bitcoin because of its energy use. None of the energy used for Bitcoin mining goes to waste. It's encapsulated forever in cryptographic amber. It makes way more sense to abandon nation-states from an environmental perspective. All right. Another piece by Knuts von Holm. Let's hit our sponsor real fast, and I'll get a quick guy's take on this one. So, you may have heard, but a major Bitcoin custodian made the mistake of sending hundreds of Bitcoin, owned by other people, to the wrong customers, due to a very simple mistake in a rewards program. Now, if I had my Bitcoin up there, I'd be pretty nervous. But do you know why I am not nervous? Because I have my Bitcoin on my BitBox hardware wallet. I hold my own keys. And I have not even once accidentally sent hundreds of Bitcoin to somebody that I do not know. They just stay safely on my open source BitBox. I add my savings on a regular basis. It's just a clean little device. It's easy to use. It's simple to set up. Even the desktop app is easy and you can connect it to your own full node. It is just the full package of protection and validation. Hold your keys, validate your own Bitcoin. Check out the BitBox O2 hardware wallet. Use discount code GUY. Gets you 5% off. And shoot them a thanks for sponsoring the show and making Bitcoin Audible possible. So there's a lot to unpack in this piece. And I also, you know, energy is the debate right now, right? This is the big, as Bitcoin becomes more and more mainstream, this continues to appear to be the major issue. And because it's incredibly counterintuitive And it requires so much understanding of our current monetary system and what the trade-off being made actually is. The misunderstanding on this issue is going to be widespread. It is going to be a major, major problem, or at least in the context of people wrapping their heads around this. It's not easy to explain. Even if you give solid data and lay out the argument, people still can't seem to wrap their heads around it. For instance, just the other day, I think it was yesterday, I was arguing with somebody, or at least trying to lay this argument out succinctly in tweets, which is very difficult to do. But nonetheless, I thought I was doing a pretty decent job, and I was trying to be nice. Yeah, it can be difficult at times. But the one thing that even when it appeared pretty clear that this other individual was conceding some of the points, was actually recognizing there was truth in the fact that Bitcoin makes renewable energy more sustainable, that it is able to buy up the wasted energy, they still could not seem to wrap their heads around the fact that, oh, well, that just makes the response, and this is something that has happened numerous times now, the response is that, well, you're just making the inefficient current system and the fossil fuel system and the setup that we currently have more profitable. You're just making it more sustainable. And then another default assumption is simply that, and this was a response I got not too long ago, was just every solar watt, like using solar as the example of our renewable energy here, every kilowatt hour that is used for Bitcoin mining is just a kilowatt hour not used to replace fossil fuels. So they're saying that if we plug up all our Bitcoin miners to the solar panels, well then, that specifically means that the solar panels can't be used for crowding out fossil fuels, to replace fossil fuels. And both of these are deeply misunderstanding the current problem of renewable energies, of our energy grid and system. The problem is that we are already throwing away most of the watts produced by renewable energies. We cannot utilize them. Bitcoin is explicitly what we mean by buyer of last resort is that it explicitly comes in and purchases that which isn't available in the market, that which is already not going to be used to replace fossil fuels. And as hash power increases on the network and you have difficulty adjustments and people are looking for cheaper and cheaper energy sources, this is axiomatically true. This is necessarily the way it is going to end up. The only times in which it won't find that equilibrium, in which it must find some below market energy source, is if it's in a massive bull run. So during the sharp price increases, suddenly, yeah, it's viable to take some energy away from Main Street. But as soon as a bunch of other computers come online in order to take advantage of that, and the difficulty adjusts upward to cap or seriously cut down the profitability of those miners and that energy source, well, then it goes back. If you aren't producing below market rate, below the average, there is absolutely no way to produce energy profitably. It is always, the difficulty of the network will always come in to match you. So trying to come up with analogies and better ways to explain this concept, I tweeted out just a little while ago, actually, just because it was in my mind while we were doing the Orange is the New Green recording and while Elon is blowing up and everybody's talking about the energy debate lately. So, you know, fresh prime time for going back into this. And in fact, there's a really good one that Nick Carter just shared out. I can't remember what the name of it is, but I'm going to have it on the Bitcoin Audible Vote page. So you can check it out up there. But it's basically a mainstream article that is the most fair on this topic that one could produce. Or at least according to Nick Carter. I'll say I actually have not read it yet. But from his comments and some of the other comments in the thread underneath it, it seems like it's a very nuanced and honest approach to understanding this problem and the dynamics. So I'm excited to dig into it myself. But like I said, I actually haven't read it. I just immediately put it on my list. But the tweet here is that A major reason that solar isn't widespread, and this is true of all renewable energies have this problem more than just about anything else. The major reason is that it has a very high margin for energy that cannot reach customers, either due to when it is being produced, like solar. Solar produces at the middle, early day. That's its peak production. When's the peak consumption? Late afternoon. Wind is the opposite. Peak consumption of energy is late afternoon. Wind produces the most at night. The biggest problem with those energy sources is the margin of its production that can't reach its customers. So first there's the when. Then there is the where that energy is produced. Very oftentimes it is produced way too far away. You know, where's the best place to get solar energy? The desert. Where are there no customers? Also the desert. There's a huge geographic dependence for renewable energies. Wind is only, you're only going to produce windmill energy where the wind blows, along the plains, out in the ocean, etc. Then there's geysers, and there's hydroelectric. You're not going to produce hydroelectric power in the dry Midwest. You're going to do it on a river, on a waterfall. You have to find these sources. You have to go to where these renewable sources are being provided and when they are being provided. The biggest reason these sources aren't able to be utilized is because of the margin of what is lost. If you are in an area, if you are somewhere on the grid, or you're far enough away from your customer where you build out a huge solar plant, but you can only sell 25% of the energy, and the rest is driven into the ground, or just completely wasted, or doesn't have the infrastructure yet to reach the customer, etc., you will never build that solar plant. It won't be built until the investment in the grid is already made to deal with the congestion, until the power plants have been built out to reach the customers, until the customers are dense enough to take advantage of it, or until there's a huge investment in batteries and some flywheel technology or whatever it is that's efficient enough to make it across the time gap, which has an enormous cost. And there has never been at scale anything to actually do this. Batteries are getting better, but they are so, so, so far from missing the mark on this right now. Without all of this being done first, without these solutions, the solar plant won't be built. Unless Bitcoin comes in and buys the lost 75%, then you can build it. Now, you can build it before you can sell 1 kilowatt hour to another customer. You can build it before you're even plugged into the grid. You can build it instantly, start making money back off your investment, and now the guy who you're trying to get to invest to build the grid out to your area doesn't have to wonder if there's going to be production. It's already there. So they will actually build out the infrastructure. Now you can start putting on batteries at a small amount of time to see how well it works. And you're not losing money in the meantime if you test out something that kind of sucks or only barely makes up the difference between noon and the afternoon or whatever it is. With Bitcoin as the buyer of last resort, it is able to purchase all of the renewable energy that cannot make it to a customer at market rate and undercut anyone in the market. And it's the very incentive in that excess production, and now their capital, the production facility now has the capital to actually build up to get to the normal market for energy where they can sell it at the normal rate again. So an analogy I've been trying to piece together, and I think it works, but we'll see. I'd be curious about your feedback. So 2/3 of the energy that's produced roughly is completely lost. Somewhere around 1/3, so half of what is lost or thrown away, is mostly in transmission. It's in the heat of the devices, it's in heat of the production, it's in the degrading of it as it crosses power lines and the needing to reamplify it, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot just in getting the energy from where it's produced to where it's consumed. Then, of course, a lot of end-user devices that are just plugged in and they drain a little bit over time. There's just a lot of just leaking all across the system. But a massive amount of it, roughly the other half of what is lost, a full third, is literally just because it cannot be consumed when it is produced. Even fossil fuel plants have this problem. Even coal plants, even the quickest to turn on and turn off energy sources have this problem because every single production plant out there has to have a buffer. It doesn't know when the customer is going to turn something on. They don't know when everybody's going to cut on their stove. They have to guess. And when they do, they need to be producing enough energy for everyone to be cutting on their stove or cutting on their Netflix or whatever it is. So they always, always have a buffer. It's not like they just flip more energy on when somebody cuts on their stove and now suddenly the grid is using more than they're producing, so they cut on some more. No, they cut it on first. And then as the grid is getting to the actual maximum capacity or getting to whatever their buffer is, 10%, they got to cut some more stuff on. So there's always a gap. And then again, go right back to the discussion with renewables and all the green energy and stuff is how painfully bad that gap is for those sources because you can't cut them on or off. They just they produce whenever nature says, all right, it's time to produce. Bitcoin can soak up all of that. The buffers, the renewables, the stuff that's too geographically far away, the stuff that the grid can't handle yet, the stuff that's not produced at the right time, all of it. It's as if right now, so the analogy that I actually wanted to get at is that it's as if we're all eating food, but we can only eat about a third of it. So we buy a sandwich or a candy bar or a cake or a steak, whatever it is, we can only eat a third of it, and two thirds of it is thrown away. Now someone comes in with some innovation, some invention that can actually take half of that trash and use it to solve a completely different problem. I guess we'll just use Bitcoin's example since we're talking about Bitcoin in the analogy. Is now we can eat, quote unquote, eat half the trash and get rid of central banks in the process. We can create an independent money built explicitly for the internet that cannot be controlled by governments. And not to mention all of the things that Knut talks about in this piece, like the fact that debt is such a poisonous thing on a society and on a culture, is that the constant debasement and frivolities that are incentivized through debt-based money, through the constant printing and issuing of new currency. As savings decline in value, you have no incentive to save. That is the incentive to save. As interest rates are manipulated, you have no incentive to save. You have no incentive to be frugal. What you want to do is to get rid of your money as fast as possible. What you want to do is take advantage of the new artificially low interest rates. We're 0% down, $0 a month. Sure, let me just go buy whatever the hell that is. Let me just consume endlessly. And we're going to completely change the behavior of everyone in society because we will pretend as if the real cost of money isn't there. And we will do it by manipulating the price, by manipulating the supply, and by tricking everyone into thinking that the economic cost they are paying isn't really there. That is what happens when you are manipulating money. You are hiding the cost and you pay for it over the long term. You get the benefit in the short term. It degrades. It's cheap. It's some, you know, plastic frivolous expenditure that you didn't think carefully about, that you just went out and bought because you did it in the instant gratification mindset of, I will buy it on debt and my future self will pay for it. And then your future self is increasingly poorer. The society is increasingly poorer. Wages stagnate, even though production is up. Inequality grows because those who have access to the money first have the benefit of the lower prices before they bid the prices up. It slowly siphons trillions and trillions of dollars out of the economy. It kills the middle class. It kills the culture. It poisons so many things, and it changes our perspective on value. It ruins how we see everything and how we relate to each other and the value that we produce, and it traps us. It traps us in bad jobs without savings. This is something that Hayek talks about. I think it's in The Use of Knowledge in Society. Great piece, by the way. I'll link to it in the show notes. Is that a person's savings is exactly the runway that they have to quit a shitty job, to leave an immoral or unethical position at a bad corporation, or to get out from under a horrible, stupid, demeaning boss. So if we are all in debt and we specifically don't have any runway to make those decisions, what happens to your convictions? What happens to your ethics when you constantly have to give up your morals or your principles just to stay alive, just to keep food on the table? Because if you lose your job, you're screwed. In a week, your bills are going to stack up and you are going to be in an awful situation, specifically because you don't have savings. What does that do to the pressures, the economic pressures, to make better jobs, to punish bad bosses and bad corporations? It vanishes. Everybody's stuck. Nobody gets punished anymore. Nobody leaves a shitty job. They don't have the option. And what about being able to stand up for yourself? What about being able to argue for a higher wage? You know, if I've got 6 months worth of savings, I'm fine, and I think I'm not getting paid what I deserve to get paid. Well, then, you know, I can tell my boss to go screw off. I can go into their room and I can say, listen, I want this salary, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to go somewhere else and get it. And, you know, maybe I'll take a week off, because why not? I need a break. So if you fire me over this, or you refuse to give me a raise, well, then I'm just going to quit. I'm going to take a break. I need a break anyway. I would love to have a week-long vacation, particularly if you are not going to pay me what I am worth. And you know what? You're going to have to pay $30,000, $40,000 just to put a new employee on the books. And you know what they're going to take? It's going to take them a year to get to the point where they can do the job half as good as I do, because I've been here for 7 years. I have experience. You're going to have to train them. They're going to be so annoying. They're going to be asking dumb, basic questions that I dealt with 7 years ago. I hope you do it. I hope you tell me that you're not going to give me a raise, because I need a break, and I kind of want you to have that problem because you don't pay people what they're worth. Or you could just pay me what I'm worth. Now imagine that scenario where somebody is in debt up to their eyeballs and they cannot make it 2 weeks without an income. That person will never get a raise, because they are able to, or they have the buffer, the defense mechanism, that savings, for them to actually stand up to their boss, to confidently walk in there and know that they will be fine if it doesn't work out in their favor. Instead, they will cower. They will feel trapped. They will feel like they have no control over the situation at all. They will hate the relationship that they have with their boss in their business. Their job will be a chore, not a choice, and they will only ever get a raise by the good graces of the company or the boss that they work under. And it will make sense to them that the major problem in the world is that people aren't nice enough, that the bosses aren't forced to give wage raises more often, that the companies aren't forced to give more vacation days. Well, you've destroyed the very economic incentive in place to make those things continue forward, to progress those exact conditions. It has been ripped away because the society is drowning in debt. It is wasteful, it is inefficient, and it is because of the nature of our money. Sound money is absolutely critical to the prosperity and sustainability of a society. And we have been tricked by the very people who profit from unsound money into thinking that this is somehow bad for us. There's about a billion other episodes on this show where we get into it, and I will probably be hitting this again just because I know we have so many new listeners on the show. I think I want to do one on deflation after I get done with Lynn Alden's piece, which again is still in the works. It's really long. So forgive me for continuing to not have it finished. I swear I'm working on it every single day, and it will be out soon. With that, a huge thank you to Knuts von Holm, a huge shout out to Citadel 21 for all of the amazing content they have. You got to get it. If you haven't been getting like your own editions, like the physical edition of the Citadel 21 magazine, I highly recommend it. And there will be a link in the show notes so you can check it out. And with that, let's go ahead and just close this one out. Thank you so much. Thanks to the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet for providing a safe place to store my Bitcoin keys. And of course, for Swan Bitcoin for the automatic dollar cost average, no hassle savings plan. So I am always stacking sats and saving Bitcoin for the future. Check them both out at guyswan.com, right at the top of the page. You can get 5% off on your Bitbox hardware wallet and anything else in their store, actually, using the coupon code GUY. And using my referral link, you can get $10 free in sats from Swan Bitcoin. Hope you enjoyed that one. Let me know what you thought. Did my food analogy work, or did it just kind of confuse things? Let me know. My DMs are open. You can always hit me up on Twitter or Telegram. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.